to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is Stu Hynek. He is a Wall Street Journal cartoonist, maybe the first cartoonist I've ever had on the show. He's a marketer and podcaster and author of the book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, which sounds like it might be an important topic to cover. So, Stu, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
So I have to ask the obvious question first. What in the heck is a cartoonist doing writing a book about sales?
That's a great question. I'm a cartoonist, obviously, but I'm also, I own a business. I'm a small business owner. And so, you know, like many other small business owners, I spend a lot of my time developing business. And, you know, I guess at the same time, I've also been a marketer for some of the biggest marketers in the world, and so it's just been a natural thing. However, the reason why I've written this book is because I've been using my cartoons just sort of as in parallel to my career, the progression of my marketing business. I've been using my cartoons to break through to almost anybody, and I've used them to break through to presidents, prime ministers, celebrities, and more usefully, lots and lots of CEOs, C-level executives, and top decision makers. So essentially, the cartoons have given me this wonderful tool, this sort of unfair advantage to be able to reach out and connect with virtually anyone.
Yeah, and I've seen you do that before, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I'd actually like to hear a little bit more. You know, I kind of hopefully somewhat humorously said you might be the first cartoonist that I've had on here. I'm sure people are saying, what's the life of a cartoonist like? You know, I'm envisioning a pipe and slippers and a lot of like ink on your fingers and, you know, at all times. But as I listen to you describe kind of what you do on a day-to-day basis, it might not quite be that cartoon-like image that we have.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's nothing like it is from television shows and so forth. I'm a small business owner, and so I do a lot of the same things everybody else does. Anybody who owns a small business does. I mean, the time that I spend cartooning is really kind of small, actually. I mean, I come up with ideas and I'll set them aside, and then I might devote a Saturday and Monday or something to draw them and produce a batch and submit it to the Wall Street Journal. But otherwise, I'm working on campaigns and stuff for clients and so on. I mean, it's really, I'm sure my day is really quite similar to most people's days in the audience.
So in the book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, you have, I'm going to give you credit for coining this. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Something you're calling contact marketing. So do you want to explain what that term means?
Sure. And in fact, I did coin it in the book. So essentially what it is these are micro-focused marketing campaigns that are designed to help facilitate contact with very, very important clients, not clients, but
contacts. Prospects,
who may
perhaps.
Become clients.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could
but it might be a referral source, just somebody you want to meet, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And so, so they can take a lot of different forms, and you'd ask me about what contact marketing is, but also where the term came from. And what was interesting is, I've been using cartoons to break through to people my whole career, but it wasn't until I got curious about what other people were doing to meet that same challenge in their businesses that this really came alive for me. Because, at first I thought, the cartoons are a secret weapon. Isn't that wonderful? When I started seeing what everyone else was doing, what I've picked up is this shadow practice of marketing that people have been using. I couldn't tell you how long, but they've been using it a long time.
Yeah.
And essentially it shows up like this. It's just saying, we need to get hold of, I'm thinking about one specific example. We need to get a hold of the CEOs of the top 20 restaurant chains in the country. And so how are we going to do that? And they come up with some audacious, just wonderfully creative way of doing it. And so these stories sort of exist as urban myths out there. And what I sought to do with the book is just to gather those up as much as I could. There's a lot out there that I don't know about yet, and certainly didn't pick up for the book. But what I did find filled out 20 categories of contact marketing campaigns, which is wonderful. And the thing that was interesting is that when I interviewed, basically I interviewed sales thought leaders to get the content for the book. And as I interviewed them, most of them had no idea what to call it. There was no name for it. And so I have been using my calling my little campaigns contact campaigns. And so that's where contact marketing came from.
Yeah, and I think in reading through the book, the thread that kind of runs through them is you're doing something that really garners attention almost to the point where the person says, well, I need to talk to this person. I 15 years ago or more, we had a furniture company, an office furniture company that was trying to get, it had a hit list of, I want to say like 100 of companies they really thought would be great prospects, but they were, you know, salespeople were just pounding the phones and they weren't really getting anywhere. So we created this campaign that I later wrote about. I called it Lumpy Mail. But essentially, we had delivered a half a gallon of milk, and their solution was like Total Office Solution or something. I can't remember, but we made a fake kind of skin for a Total cereal box. Remember the cereal Total? So we made a kind of fake, you know, skin that went over that, and you know, had all the benefits of their company and meeting with them. And sent that package, had it hand delivered to 100 of the hip folks on their list, and 50 of them actually set appointments. Of the 100. And I mean, it was just because they were like, I had to see what idiot sent me this thing.
Well, that's really interesting, John, because that is really rather typical of the kinds of results that I was encountering first of all in my own contact campaigns, but also those that I was told about. By the thought leaders that I interviewed. I mean, you just described a campaign that generated a 50% response rate, which is way off the scale when you compare it to other. For example, if you compare it to a direct mail or direct marketing campaign, where you hear that number 1% bandied around a lot.
Yeah.
Getting a 50% response, I mean, direct marketers would consider that impossible.
Well, and I tell you, The real contrast for me was what they had been doing at that time was not direct mail. They'd been doing cold calling. So essentially, we said, here's a new way to cold call, if you will, that's going to get a 50% response. And I think that's probably the dramatic lesson in there is that, you know, people have been doing this. You know, there would be a risk, I think, for somebody to look at your book and say, oh, contact marketing, it's just a new fancy word for cold calling. But there's a significant difference, isn't there?
There really is. And again, I love your example, and I could give a lot of them from the book as well. But your example right there—that's exactly how contact marketing works. You identify this list, very, very targeted list. It could be as few as one, actually.
Sure.
But in your example, they identified 100 accounts. I mean, these are named accounts. Right. These are really very typical things in the selling world. And also typically, cold calling doesn't particularly work well. I mean, it can, but there are ways to improve the chances. But you know, I got a cold call before we did our recording right now. And hi, could I talk to the person in charge of credit card processing?
Right, right.
No, click.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do it better. You have to do a better job of it. And certainly, one of the things in your book that you say is that, I mean, you've got this wonderful, very brief definition of marketing, which is getting people who have a specific need or problem to know, like, and trust you. And that's what sales is about, too. It's just people buy from people that they know, like, and trust.
That's right.
And so your marketing has to get you there. It has to it has to humanize you.
Well, and I think the other thing, of course, that's going on today, too, is that now that the buyers have all these tools and knowledge and information, you know, they don't have to depend on that cold calling salesperson to show up and say, okay, tell me all about merchant accounts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have to start that know, like, and trust before the person even raises their hand and says, I'm in need of what you're selling.
Yeah, or certainly before they'll talk to you. They might talk to someone else that they know and trust and like, but you won't get the chance. And I think what contact marketing allows you to do is to, I won't say, I don't want to say that it leapfrogs that process, but what it does is speeds it up.
Sure.
Maybe makes it immediate, actually. I mean, when I send my cartoons around, my cartoons typically they're personalized, so they're about the recipient, and if I've targeted the cartoon properly so that they laugh and they say, that's true, that's me in there.
Yeah.
So anything like that, then you know, knowing that, I guess it also helps that I'm one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists, so that's kind of an exciting thing. I mean, it's sort of creates an interesting credential for me. But when people get the cartoons, and they're about them, and so, it very quickly turns me into someone that they don't know me yet, but they like me already.
Yeah.
And they're certainly willing to hear what I have to say. I think probably because they're saying, if this is how this guy thinks, I want to know how he'll solve this problem for us, or something like that.
Another really important element of that you mentioned on the Wall Street Journal, of course, which then also gives an air of authority and to some degree some social proof that goes along with that. So it really makes kind of power packed there. It's not just, hey, here's somebody. I mean, your cartoon, personalized cartoon, I think, is an effective tool, but it's certainly by having that authority and social proof makes it even more impactful.
Yeah, it helps a lot. Yeah. It really helps a lot.
So one of the things that you talk about is the idea that this kind of helps level the playing field, that you kind of rise above from the bag carrying salesperson to having maybe even a little bit more equal stature, I should say, with CEOs, C-level executives and top decision makers. What's the thinking that led you to that conclusion?
Well, I think what you might be talking about is the VIP makeover chapter in the book. And you know, I think we all need VIP. Let me retract that. What we need to be able to do is, if we're going to reach out to someone who is very important and very difficult to reach, which is the definition of contact marketing, then one of the things you need to do is, the good thing is you don't just break through and then have nothing to say to this person. You know, it's going to waste their time and yours. So you're going to want to know what the value is that you bring to the conversation. You really need to know what it is you're bringing to them, and you need to know that it's actually something that they're thinking about and that would be relevant to what they're doing. So beyond all that, though, if you don't have roughly equal business stature, then it's also very difficult to get on the phone, either to get through their or get past their gatekeeper. I don't want to call them gatekeepers, but their executive assistants are not going to want to put you through if they don't perceive you as being somewhat roughly on the same business level as their boss. And so I think you need a VIP statement, and you need to develop one. And so in mine, when I'm talking, for example, if I'm talking to an executive assistant, I'll introduce myself with that VIP statement. Hi, I'm Stu Hynek. I'm one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists. I'm a Hall of Fame nominated marketer. And I have this, and I go into this one thing that I'd like to present to your boss. Maybe I want to send to your boss. Maybe all I want to do is send a print of one of my cartoons that was in the Wall Street Journal, and it's about your boss. They'll get really excited about that.
Right.
But there's always that, you've got to come up with something that has them saying, oh, this is someone I need to listen to. And, you know, one thing about, I was about to call the executive assistant a gatekeeper, and if I might go there for a moment, I don't think of them as gatekeepers. I'm relieved when I reach executive assistants, and I know most people who sell, actually we all sell, don't we? But most people in sales dread the executive assistant because they think of them as people who just they're just barriers.
Yeah, their job's to say no.
Yeah, and really equally, their job is to say yes, and really to seek out those opportunities that their boss might have missed otherwise, and that happens a lot.
Sure.
So the executive assistants, they're some of the brightest people in the organizations they're in. They're often some of the most senior.
They're the most well-connected.
they're definitely well-connected. So I think of them as both talent scouts and VPs of access, and I treat them that way. And so as a talent scout, we need to help them see the value and understand the value that you're going to bring to their boss, because otherwise, why would they put you through? Then the other side of their job kicks in. They should be keeping you out. And I think that might be what a lot of salespeople are experiencing. So instead of figuring out how to actually address that, they are thinking in terms of, how do I get around the gatekeeper? And of course, that doesn't work either. They can see that coming.
Yeah.
And it just makes them all the more resolute about keeping you out.
Yeah, I suppose if their job is to keep you out and you find a back door, you know, any progress you make, they may spend the rest of their life making sure they shut that back door.
Yeah, they'll make sure that you don't get in one way or another.
So I want to talk about some of the examples in the book, but one of the things as I was reading through the book, I've always said that my podcast actually acts a lot this way, because when I first got started, I wanted to develop this medium and produce content and hoped one day I would have a listenership that you know, appreciated the information, but I quickly saw that it gave me access to people. Some of the first guests that I wanted to have on, I sent an email and said interview request, and you know, had that email said, "Hey, I'd love to pick your brain for 20 minutes," probably wouldn't have gotten much response. But because I said, "Hey, I want to put you on my podcast and promote your new book or whatever it is," you know, to my audience, I rarely, if ever, can I even remember somebody saying no. And so I think that I've always viewed my podcast actually in that way. Now, fortunately, I've got some listenership and whatnot as well that I've developed over the years. But I tell people all the time, I would do it for the access as much as anything.
Yeah, you can see that. It was a theme that came up in my research for the book as well, that asking, giving someone, your target, mm-hmm. some exposure, some media exposure, is a wonderful carrot to dangle out there, and they're usually very, very excited to tell their story. So, yeah, podcasts and live radio shows. I'm going to have you on my show later this week, and the same thing, that there is that element of being able to reach out and get just the best possible guests on, who also may happen to be, in some cases anyway, great potential clients and potential partners and so on.
Excellent.
So that's a great device for it.
So tell me a little bit about, describe a typical campaign or two. You obviously have talked about your personalized cartoons, and then I shared my kind of total cereal. I'd love if you could share a couple other examples that might be, you know, a different kind of way in the door.
Sure. Well, let's see. There's this whole category of gifts. There's half a gift that you might have heard of.
Yeah.
Someone sending the left shoe of a pair of shoes, and then and a note saying, "Now that I have my foot in the door, it's kind of a corny thing actually. But now that I have my foot in the door, I'd like to talk to you, and I'll bring the other shoe when we meet." Or sending a remote control model, but the control unit itself is missing, and they'll bring that in when you meet. So there's half a gift. There are re-gifts, gifts that are meant to be given away. For example, maybe if you're reaching out to the chief sales officers of companies, then the gift could be something that the CSO gives away to their staff members, maybe the top producer each month, something like that. But in fact, my cartoons show up as gifts as well. But one of my favorite forms of gifts that came up in the research was the visual metaphors.
Yeah.
And one of the coolest examples that I came across was what is done by Dan Waldschmidt. And you may or may not know Dan.
Mm-hmm.
He's an amazing guy, actually. He runs 100-mile running races.
Yeah.
And wins,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
I've had him on the show a few years ago.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so he's got this really wonderful message, as you know. It's about, hey, just get out and get this stuff done.
Yeah.
Don't dilly-dally.
Yeah.
And that all ties into the theme of his company and his book and his blog, which they're all called Edgy Conversations. And there's that element of edge that he has used in his contact campaign. So, in his primary business, he's actually a turnaround specialist.
Yeah.
And so he's always looking, he combs the paper every day for stories of missed earnings estimates. And when he finds one, he'll very quickly compile all the contact information he needs. And he has this beautiful sword made, and it's engraved in the name of the CEO he's going to reach out to. And these swords, by the way, are made by the prop maker who made all the swords for the film Gladiator. So they're beautiful. They're really beautifully made. And so that gets placed in a fine wooden box, and also within the box is a handwritten note. Handwritten notes actually are really pretty magical in themselves, and they show up a lot.
Yep.
In these, but so it's a handwritten note, and he's saying, "Hi, I noticed that that you missed your earnings estimates, and I wanted to just tell you that I understand, I get it that business is war, and you know I see that you lost the battle recently. I just want to let you know that if you ever need any extra hands in the battle, we've got you covered, or we've got your back." That was it. So he's not even talking about what he does.
Yep.
And he said that he gets essentially 100% response rate. And, you know, up until studying this or researching this for the book, I was embarrassed to talk about the few times I've gotten 100% response rates to some of my campaigns. But what I found is that I'm not alone. In fact, so the 50% response rate that you described with the milk and the total box, also, all of these, they're just so far off the scale for what we think of as traditional marketing response rates. But anyway, he gets about 100% response rate. Now, it costs him $1,000 each time he sends one of those out. But so that's $1,000 per contact, also way off the scale for most marketing strategies. But the thing is, you know, he doesn't sell to everyone that he sends these to, and he doesn't get, he said essentially 100%, so let's say it's 98% of the time he gets through. So that doesn't mean that he's going to sell a turnaround contract. But when he does, these are multi-million-dollar contracts. Mm-hmm. So he can afford to send a lot of swords around and cultivate multi-million-dollar contracts. So I think that's a great one. But you mentioned also that your podcast is a great contact device. And really, I would put that into the what I call media insight and exposure categories, or subgrouping, sure. But interviews and media presence and, you know, using your book. Some of us are authors, some more well-known than others. Yours is really well-known. And so I would imagine that your book is also a wonderful contact device. If you ever wanted to get a hold of someone and you wanted to point out something that you wanted to do within the book, your book would be dynamite for that.
Yeah, and I actually have a network of independent marketing consultants that we train and use the Duct Tape Marketing System, and many of them frequently use the book as a calling card, so to speak.
Oh, perfect.
But one of the things that I know you point out in the book, and I you know, if you just send somebody a book and say, "Hey, I thought of you. This is great. It's got great stuff in it," not much is going to happen. When people are really effective is they highlight a couple sections, put a couple stickies in there, and say, "Look, do one of these three problems describe one of the challenges you're having? We'd love to talk." And then all of a sudden it really becomes, you know, maybe they do dig in and read the book, but they're focused on, "Hey, you're pointing out one of my pains," you know, very quickly here.
Yeah, that's perfect. And you're right. You wouldn't, it doesn't make sense to send a book and to say, "Here, read it." Because it's a little bit too broad.
Yeah.
But just as you've said, if you get a handwritten note especially if it's coming from the author, that's just wonderful. But if you get a handwritten note and it says, "I'd like to talk to you about what's on page 232, because I think it's relevant to the initiative that I've been reading about," in the something like that. So it's just you don't seem like you just sent them a book and or you're telling them to read it, but you've got something of specific value and interest to talk to them about. Those are great contact devices.
Well, and now maybe they have been convinced that they should invest the time to read the whole book at some point, because they were shown some value, you know, with very little investment, so to speak.
Yeah.
What role, many of these ideas like sending the milk and sending your cartoons off and, you know, having somebody physically as a guest on your show involve you know, real people things and live things and physical things. Have you seen people having success using social media or, you know, email or, you know, some of the more digital strategies?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because really the amazing thing about contact marketing, the thing that became contact marketing for me, which is, you know, this collection of experiences and response rates and tactics and so forth, is that it's something that produces response rates that are going as high as 100%, ROI as high as, the record from that research was 620,000%, which is crazy. Sure. But the other one that's really crazy is that the methodologies range in cost per contact from zero to $10,000. So,
yeah,
another way that this is just a very, very bizarre form of marketing. Well, on that zero end, the no cost end, are just some wonderful and very effective ways to use social media and email and the phones. And I would say, I'm going to say mail, although mail is not free, it's sort of almost relatively free compared to the $10,000 method. It's pretty close to free. But yeah, social media, as you know, social media, I know you know this because we're connected on social media, and that's how has a lot to do with how you and I've come to know each other. But social media is a wonderful way to connect with people. And again, we go back to that definition that you have so eloquently given for marketing, which is to get people to know, like, and trust you. And what a great way to do this. Social media gives us a great way to do that. So if you're on Facebook, you tend to find that people are posting their personal forays, whatever it is they're doing. Mm-hmm. They'll post it, whether they're rooting for a team, whether they're going on a trip or whatever, just what their kids are doing. And so it gives you this really very natural way to engage with people on a human level. And LinkedIn is a great way to pardon me, LinkedIn is another really great way to connect with people on a business level. Certainly to be watching what they're actually, another one is Twitter, but what are people tweeting about? What's got their attention and what are they working on? Because between those three, you're likely to find a lot of information about what people are up to. I mean, you know, I followed your meetings, or not your, it was the meetings or the seminars at the, it looked like it was a meeting or seminar at the Dude Ranch.
Oh, uh-huh, right.
And I was like, that's really cool. I'm watching that happen.
Yeah.
And so it just helps you get to know people, but they get to know you as well. And and so social media is a great way to do that, great way to just reach out to people. For example, on Twitter, I've been having some really interesting success because I'm promoting my book right now.
Right.
So I wanted to reach out to some of the people that are my followers. You know, that's not really a deep level of relationship there. I mean, somebody just clicks a button and now they follow you, and they might see your tweets or they might not. But I've been reaching out to them with the cartoons that are in my book. I've got 21, or I headed each chapter with a cartoon. So I have 21 cartoons that I wanted to do something with to promote the book. And I turned all of them into memes that are used on social media. And I'm reaching out to some of the biggest, some of the people with the biggest followings on Twitter, and asking them, would you be interested in running some of these memes? I mean, just tweeting them.
Yeah.
And they are.
Yeah.
They're doing it. So there are all these really interesting ways. I mean, that's sort of mine, but if someone has a book out, tweeting a picture of you with their book in the airport is probably going to get you special notice or personal notice from the person. So it's really it's a wonderful way to reach out to people and connect with them. All of those are. Email is a great way too, because it's easy to figure out what most email addresses are. It's usually, it could be the first initial and last name. It could be first name dot last name, or first name underscore last name. If you try those, a lot of those will get you through. Those are actual email addresses. And if you wanted to reach an executive, let's say a CEO, I think if you're going to try to do it via email, doing it during the week is probably the worst time to do it. Doing it, I discovered through the research for the book, that doing it Saturday morning or, you know, sort of in the evening, early-ish evening Sunday, is a great way to get through to these CEOs. By the way, CEOs, and I wanted to define that a little bit further. They could be CEOs, or I've also using that as a euphemism for the center of enterprise opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's really just whoever it is that is your critical contact. If they're important and if they actually are CEOs, then they're bombarded with email all week long.
Right.
And so Saturday morning, it's been discovered that a lot of these people are up early Saturday morning going through their emails, and there's no filter. It's not, well, there is a filter from the email client itself, but there's no filter from the executive assistant. It's just going straight through to them.
Yeah, that's.
And if you're really
Over the years, you know, I've developed that habit of, that's when I try to clean up the stuff that, you know, has kind of been hanging out all week. And so you're.
Yeah. 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 And likewise, Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening, they're often preparing for their week. So, again, they're on their email accounts and getting things lined up.
All right, Stu, we've exhausted the time. I'm speaking with Sue Hynek. He is the author of How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And Stu, I know that book can be purchased in many places, but is there somewhere you want listeners to check out more information?
Well, sure. They could go to my website and get a free preview of the book, introduction of the first chapter, if they'd like to do that, at stuhynek.com. So that's stuhynecke.com.
Awesome. Well,
that's
thanks.
Probably the best way.
Thanks, Stu. Enjoyed the book and enjoyed meeting you, and hopefully we'll run into you out there on the road.
I look forward to that. Thank you so much, John, for having me on your show.